You know, one of the ways that we educate ourselves is through relationships and networking. And so really the important part when you buy a site is that relationship that you have with the seller. And those have been invaluable to me. I made so many really, really instructional, educational relationships from sellers who, and that starts with setting off on the right foot with the relationship at the very, very beginning of the process.
Welcome to the Quiet Light Podcast with Joe Valley and Mark Doust. Since 2007, Quiet Light Brokerage has been helping thousands of online entrepreneurs realize their dream of buying and selling online businesses. And now, we're bringing all the knowledge our team has acquired straight to you. No matter your niche or industry, these lessons, tips, and strategies will help you build, grow, acquire, or sell your online businesses better. And now, here's Joe and Mark.
Joe, how are you?
I'm good, Mark. How are you doing today?
Good, good. I got to talk to another member from Rhodium Weekend, which is one of those events that we talk about a lot on this podcast. I talked to Jeff Hunt.
I know Jeff Hunt's a good guy. I think he's bought, 400 businesses in his lifetime?
Websites. So it was about 40 or 50 transactions that he's done. These are mostly sub $50,000 transactions.
Pause. I said 400. Am I completely wrong?
No, you're not completely wrong at all. So 40 to 50 transactions, a total of about 400 to 500 websites in all.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. Can you imagine trying to manage that many sites?
Absolutely not. I have trouble doing my job here at Quiet Light. That's an immense amount.
Yeah, I know everyone recognizes you as a slacker. So anyways, he's bought a lot of businesses. He's bought a lot of sites, and he has a lot of experience in that. Now he's teaching people. He's got the Website Investor book that he wrote, and he talks about developing systems to buy sites successfully. And he talks a lot about some of the mistakes he made along the way. We talked about some due diligence tips, but also about this ongoing question. Is it better to buy small or buy big? Now, what's better for you? What's going to help you avoid risk more? And how's that changed over the years? He's got a lot of insights into due diligence that were fascinating. And honestly, the interviews I've done, I kind of wish we would flip this one around, because towards the end of the episode, we really get into some good topics.
It's interesting that, you know, the subject of should I buy $1 million business or $100,000 businesses always comes up. And all we can do is talk from our own experience and what other people like Jeff have done. And I think, you know, when we had Kevin Peterson on the episode buying, you know, a portfolio of SaaS businesses, he said, and I think we've quoted him, that it takes the same amount of work to run $1 million business as it does $100,000 business. In some cases, it actually takes less because it's more established. And Jeff's bought 40 to 5,400 smaller sites, right?
That's right. Yeah. And we talk about that. I do think that running a larger business is often less work. And I wrote an article on this years ago. We have not been blogging for almost a year now because we've been focusing on the podcast, but I did write an article on this where I went into the data actually to take a look at what are the average number of hours that people are working on smaller sites versus larger sites, and what is the average number of staff, and how does that correlate with revenues. There was some really fascinating data in there because I got a chance to really do a deep dive there. So we'll link to that in the show notes if anyone wants to do some further reading on this. But larger sites, they're often less work and in some ways less risky because there's you have more cash flow. And we talk about that. You know, if you have a business that has $20,000 in revenue and you lose a key client or you lose a key traffic source and things get cut in half, you're left with $10,000.
Absolutely. That's why, just to say it so people hear it, that the multiples, the valuations on these jump when your discretionary earnings is up in that $1 million mark. You're gonna jump significantly in terms of overall value, not obviously because of numbers, but because the multiple actually jumps too from a 3 to 4, for instance.
Yeah. And I was talking to a potential client the other day who has a business who it's multi-million dollars in revenue, but the earnings is starting to have troubles. And he said, well, would anyone buy this? And I explained to him that if a business has millions of dollars in revenue, even if it's struggling from an earnings standpoint, yeah, that's going to really negatively affect the business. But it's probably still sellable. But if you have a business that makes $5,000 or $10,000 a year in gross revenues and isn't making any money, probably not going to sell it. Or it's going to be very difficult to sell for anything of value. So getting to a certain size, there's just more flexibility on the part of the buyer.
Yeah. But Jeff has a different model and system, and he's buying lots of smaller ones. So he's doing something very, very right, different than your blog a couple of years ago talked about. So it'll be real interesting to see what he's got to say.
Yeah, let's get to it.
All right. Hey, Jeff, thanks for joining me.
Hey, it's great to be here, Mark.
Now, we know each other from a mutual group that we're both part of, and people who have listened to the podcast before will be familiar with this group. At least you've heard of it before. And that's Rhodium Weekend. You and I have attended for the past several years, right?
Yeah, I've met a lot of fantastic people at Rhodium. It's a good, you know, it's, as you know, it's a group of people who either are buying or have already bought into and operate online businesses. So it's kind of a really unique crowd, and good to be part of it.
Yeah, if anybody wants an introduction to Chris Yates, let me know. I'd be more than happy. And of course, Jeff, I'm sure you'd be able to provide that as well. Chuck Mullins, who works at Quiet Light Brokerage, he introduced me to Rhodium. And really, Chris had actually reached out to me, but Chuck really encouraged me to go. And it's been a good investment of our time and place. So it's a good group. And I met you there a few years ago. We talked at the conference, and then we've seen each other at conferences since then. I think the last time we met in person was Affiliate Summit last summer.
Yeah, that's right. And I met Chuck there, I think, the first time at Rhodium, and I've formed a number of partnerships there. So it's a great group of people if you're in this, particularly if you're in the business that we're in.
All right. Well, let's start getting into it a little bit. And as our listeners know, we usually let our guests introduce themselves. So if you want to just give just kind of a quick background on who you are and what you do, that'd be really helpful.
Okay. Well, you know, I may be one of your older guests. I don't know, but the white hair kind of gives it away a little bit. I'm in my 50s and I'm still in the website business. So,
oh my.
Yeah. It's kind of funny. Like a bunch of the guys that we hang out with are a little bit younger than I am, but I give them a run for their money. I actually started out in the corporate world, probably like a lot of people who buy websites. And I had a career with IBM and I was in middle management. I had a pretty large organization of people who we were in the services business. So big companies would give us their IT departments to run. So I had development organization and infrastructure guys and all that, and had about a budget of about $25 million at that time. But it's kind of funny that even though I was kind of in that technical business, I didn't know anything about the internet at all. And so my first introduction to the internet was actually, I started a real estate business. I moved overseas, left IBM, moved overseas, and I started this real estate business, and I realized it needed a website. And so I kind of just dove in and I learned how to do all the website stuff and created a website for this business. And then after that, I, you know, my eyes kind of got open to this idea, well, you know, starting a website's really hard. And so I started looking at it as ways to buy them, and I started buying websites. And over the last 10 years, actually, I've done probably 50 or 60 transactions, and I bought something like 300 websites, actually probably closer to five now. But a lot of those were in big groups, like networks of websites that did similar functions and those kind of things. So then along the way, I kind of wanted to leverage some of my assets. And one of my assets was just having been doing this for a while and, you know, having my fingers in all kinds of online businesses and different business models across all of those sites. And so I wrote a book called The Website Investor. And then I've done courses on website investing and some networking like at Rhodium and other places. And so really enjoy this. I really love almost everything about online business. Just not just the lifestyle part of it, but really like the analytical part of it. And there's a marketing component and operations component. It's just a lot of fun, really. So that's my story.
So I'm sorry, you said 300, 400 websites in total, maybe more?
Yeah. Like one of my purchases was something like 250 websites that were, I can't even read the domain names. They were German and French, and they were these affiliate websites selling Amazon affiliate products into Amazon Germany and Amazon France. And I ran with those for a couple of years. Some of them died off, and then I sold it.
Okay. How in the world do you begin to even manage that many sites?
Yeah, well, you know, that's one of the many mistakes that I've made, I think, in the course of my website career is buying too many and chasing too many ideas that looked really interesting. Like it's probably happened to you, right? Well, maybe it hasn't happened to you, but like I see these things and I think, whoa, that's a very unique business model. That's really cool. I'd like to learn more about it. And I pick it up. But in terms of those particular sites, actually, those are kind of template sites. And so there was a lot of automation. There were programs that could make the same update to tens, 20, sometimes more sites at a time. And so that's how we manage that.
Okay, that makes a little bit more sense. Now, when you say that you've been buying all these websites, and we don't have to talk specific dollar amounts, but are we talking to larger sites, smaller sites? What's the range that you've really been investing in?
Well, I've bought, and again, maybe this is something I would do differently if I were starting over again, but most of my sites were sub $50,000, only a handful over that amount. Just a lot of them, as I mentioned, and I've done kind of a combination of buying and then building. And typically for me, the cycle has been, I'll buy something that I don't really know that much about. Like I started out with Google News approved sites in the early days. So I bought, you know, a dozen different news sites over time. But then after a while, after a year or two into that, I really understood that news business model. So it was very easy for me to actually create my own news websites and then go from there. And I've done a similar thing, for example, in the affiliate site world. So one of the reasons that we buy is because we're learning something, we're picking up, we're kind of learning from something that's already working. And then later on, if you want to add to it by building from scratch, that's kind of a logical sequence for me.
Yeah, all right, let's dive into that topic a little bit, because we get this question a lot from potential buyers, especially first-time buyers, people that might be coming in and they know that they want to get into the website business or some sort of online business. They're coming from the corporate business world like you did. And, you know, they might have enough money to do a larger deal, but they wonder, is that the right thing to do? And I think you've already touched on a few points here, which might be interesting. But let's talk about specifically, you know, let's just start with the benefits of buying small to start. You've done a lot of buying smaller sites. What were some of the big benefits that you've gotten from that? And then maybe later on, we can move into some of the drawbacks from that.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds great. And, one of the first things that I say when I get that question of buy big or small is whatever you buy, it needs to be a good quality site. It needs to be something that's very stable, no matter how big or small it is. So to kind of get to your specific question, what are the benefits of buying small? Whereas the obvious one is that you're risking less capital. And for many people, that's important, particularly when they don't have that experience that leads to the confidence to do something bigger. So that's kind of important. And for many people I run into ask me that question, and it doesn't even matter what their capacity is. Some of them have the capacity and capital to buy very, very large websites, multi-million-dollar websites, but they still don't want to do it. They, you know, they want to spend $5,000 or $25,000 or something like that. And the reason is because it gives them the, you know, one of the things that you don't even think about necessarily is they don't even know what it's like to be a website owner. So it isn't just the risk of the money, but they're not even sure that they'll enjoy the end state, which is being the owner and operator of websites. So that's one thing that buying small can do, is kind of give them a taste of what it's like. And then secondly, it gives them an exercise of the transaction process. Now that's, as you know, the transaction process is quite different for a very small site than for a large one, but at least they're going through the steps of doing the evaluation, looking, evaluating, executing a transaction, setting up the accounts, perhaps hiring the team, and all of those kinds of steps. And then some basic things that if you've never been in the website business, you've never done before, like, you know, getting hosting set up and domain ownership and some of those basic things. So that's kind of the value. And the other thing is that whereas the dynamics and management of large versus small can be quite different, some of the basics in terms of the actual business models behind the sites are actually quite similar. So a content website monetized by advertising is very similar to, you know, whether it's big or small. It's just the mechanisms and process you put around it are different. So if you're unfamiliar with a business model, you can pick up some familiarity from buying a smaller site.
Something that you said that I think is a key point here, and that is buying for education and buying small for education. It's something that you've done quite a bit where you've bought, you've learned an industry or a niche or a style of online business. And then you've been able to use that as an education to be able to build your own as well. I've talked to buyers a lot about their first purchase and have advised to buy smaller if they want to get that education so that they're understanding that. Can you talk about that a little bit more, how you've used buying small to be able to learn more about a niche or about a business style?
Yeah, that's an excellent way to put it in a general sense, education. And, you know, one of the ways that we educate ourselves is through relationships and networking. And so really the important part when you buy a site is that relationship that you have with the seller. And those have been invaluable to me. I made so many really, really instructional, educational relationships from sellers who, and that starts with setting off on the right foot with the relationship at the very, very beginning of the process. But you know, many of the sites I bought, I got really good coaching. I have, you know, relationships to this day with people that I bought sites from 8 years ago who were entrepreneurs. They figured something out. You know, most, as you know, most businesses fail. A very high percentage of businesses fail offline or online. And even a higher percentage of online businesses fail than offline. And I think it's just because more people try at the online business. But when you have any site that's been around for a while and has kind of built up a following and so on, is one that hasn't failed, or at least not yet. And so the entrepreneurs who are able to do that and figure that out, a lot of times they know things that you want to know from them. So the key thing is actually learning what has been built, what the process is that they've used to attract customers. And we'll probably talk more about that later. I hope we did.
Again, we can talk about whatever you think would be worth talking about. I do want to talk a little bit about the differences, though, in buying big versus buying small. And you mentioned in there one of the benefits of buying small is that you're obviously risking less capital. And I would completely agree with that. That obviously, I mean, it's pretty obvious if you're buying $1 million site or buying a $10,000 site, there's significantly less at stake. But when I tell buyers to buy small initially, oftentimes I tell them that and say, you know, be prepared for a little bit higher risk profile. And in my experience, and feel free to disagree with this, in my experience, buying small often comes with a little higher level of risk. I know you said you have to buy quality. What's been your experience as far as the quality of businesses that you bought in this smaller range?
I totally agree with you. And the reason that buying smaller carries more risk is because most smaller websites don't have the same age. They don't have the same momentum. They haven't necessarily withstood the test of time. And what that really means is in the internet business, things change really fast. So new competitors enter the space. There's changes in technology, changes in software. And most importantly, there's changes amongst the big players like Facebook, Google, and the like, and they're making policy changes and all those things. So when you buy a smaller site, in most cases, they may be successful because they're flying under a radar of sorts, or they haven't been around long enough to see the change from desktop to mobile, or from, you know, easily making Facebook ad purchases to a more competitive environment, Facebook ad purchases, all of those things. So as a result, the lower end sites are almost always more risky. Now, obviously, you can mitigate the risk the longer you look, but sometimes it takes a really long time to find a site that has true stability that's still kind of at that low end. So that's right. So my experience with that, to answer the specific question, is that I failed a lot of times. I probably, my early sites that I bought, I bet you 8 out of 10 just didn't make it. Either they didn't pay for themselves. And some of them might have made almost no money. Most of them made some money, but, you know, not nearly what I wanted. And then they just kind of taper off over time.
Yeah. And I've found as well with larger sites, having that extra cushion of more discretionary earnings and more revenue gives you a lot more ability to make a mistake and absorb it. With a small site, if it's only generating $20,000, $30,000 per year, if it loses a major source of traffic, all of a sudden that 20,000-30,000 can go down to 5. And now all of a sudden you're questioning, why am I even doing this anymore? Whereas if you have a business that's doing $500,000 a year in discretionary earnings and it gets hit hard, you're still probably making six figures. and have some leverage there to be able to maybe buy yourself out of the situation or fund what needs to be fixed, maybe placing that better. So there's a little bit of stability there. Workload as well. I mean, I've found, and I'd love your insights on this. I found that with larger sites, sometimes the workload can actually be less because you can afford to hire people. Whereas if you have a site that's just kind of on the edge, and I ran into this with my first company actually that I owned, I got it to $120,000 in revenue. And really, I needed to hire people, but I needed all the money I was getting. So I couldn't really afford 6 months of that financial hit. What's been your experience with dealing with the cash flows and maybe the freedoms that cash flows would on a larger business would bring you?
Yeah, my experience is exactly what you said, where, and in fact, I have websites right now where I'm forced to do things that I really shouldn't be doing. You know, I should be spending my time thinking about the strategy, looking at the competition, kind of plotting out a roadmap and managing people. And then some sites just aren't making enough money for me to hire someone to do that on my behalf. So that's absolutely right. As I mentioned, I had big organizations and then I've done everything where I sweep the floor myself and, you know, so I've kind of gone the whole gamut. And certainly when you have a team, then it really frees you up to use your mind in a different way. And that's a lot of fun. I mean, if that's, you know, kind of where your skills are, what you want to do. So definitely that's a big advantage of buying big.
All right. So you have done, you told me at the beginning, I didn't write it down. How many transactions again, estimated?
Probably 60.
All right. That's a ton. I mean, we're less than 1,000 over 10 years. That's with lots and lots of buyers and sellers. 60 by one person is a lot. I'm going to put you on the spot. And if you don't have an answer for this, please just tell me. But I'm curious, what's one of the craziest things that you can share that you've run across in your process of buying sites?
Well, you know, I've run across more than I've, you know, there's some crazy ones I've run across that I haven't bought, but, you know, there's several of them. One of them that I talk about in my book is, I found this site, I had a hard time finding out what product it sold, but it was insanely profitable, like, you know, like 90% profit margins, but it was an e-commerce site. So it was a hard physical good. And then when I looked into it carefully, what they were selling was urine, laboratory processed urine for people who are trying to pass drug tests. And so after I finally understood exactly what their product was, I understood why it was hard for me to understand, because they didn't want to like advertise it too much, but they had to do it enough to be able to sell the site.
one of the first clients I took on was selling poppy flowers, and he was selling them for potpourri arrangements. And me being naive, I had no idea that they were used for opiates as well. And I had one person tell me, one buyer is like, "So are you okay with selling drugs?" I'm like, "What? What are you talking about?" Ends up they were not, but there was people buying the poppies, at least my theory, probably buying the poppies thinking that they were buying drugs. They were probably just getting a stomach ache. All right. Well,
you know, that's interesting you bring that up, because you know, it's an example of one of those subtle ethical issues. And we run into those issues a lot in this business, quite honestly, even for sites that you would think, you know, don't really have any controversy around them, you run into those kind of things. So that's one of the things that buyers should be aware of.
Yeah, well, let's pivot over to that, because you've got your course, you wrote your book as well. And your course is at websiteinvestor.com, is that right?
Yeah, ownoptimize.com is a good place right now.
Ownoptimize.com, okay. Yeah. And we'll link to that in the show notes. So just go over to our website and look at the show notes for the course, the online course. Let's talk about some of the lessons that you teach in this course. Obviously, we'll keep some of the best secrets for the course itself, but what are some of the things that you try and teach buyers who are taking your course?
Well, I don't want to oversimplify it, and this may just sound too simple, but one of the biggest mistakes I think that new buyers make is they don't just look at the graphs. And it's amazing what the simple graphs can tell you, the direction of the traffic and the direction of the financials. Those two simple things are really, really important. And a lot of times when you look at a graph that's a 12-month graph, and it's, you know, you can kind of tell visually that it's down, gently downward sloping. But in truth, it might actually be like between 12 and 20% downward sloping. And if you just extrapolate that into the future, I mean, business is going to be worth nothing in, you know, just a few years. And so I think people tend to have an optimistic view when they look at numbers. And sometimes they realize that there are businesses that are losing money over time, and they feel like the moment that they buy the site, it's going to stop losing money. It's going to be flat or go up from there. And there's no real reason to think that. So that's kind of, you know, it's really simple, but that's a way that you can dismiss a lot of sites, unless you have really specific knowledge about why it's going down and a very specific idea about how you can turn it around. And we can talk about that later too, because, you know, a lot of people, that's hard to really know for sure. So then you need to just stay away from those kinds of sites. So we need to look, so overall, I mean, the key thing is you look at the graphs. If it's a stable business, you're looking for a stable business, because the most important thing is, I kind of teach a risk-based methodology, both for valuation and also for valuation selection websites. So for me, the real core thing is you're looking for the engine for customer acquisition. And you can, all kinds of sites you can evaluate, usually the successful ones, the owner, the creator has found a way to systematically attract new clients. And, you know, if it's a content site, then a client is a website visitor. If it's a services site, a client, whatever it is. And that process, you know, whatever the process is, it might be posting to Facebook every day. It might be buying Google AdWords ads. It might be just a content creation regimen. It might be a product launch philosophy on Amazon, like these kinds of steps. I choose these kinds of products. I brand them in this way. I acquire them in this way. And the process may be very, it may not be like mind blowing in terms of what it actually is, but it might just be very consistent and perhaps complex and nuanced. And whatever that process is, it's that engine that drives the site. That's really what you're buying. Because if you can get your mind around it and understand what it is that they're doing that attracts these customers consistently, and then you can start envisioning how you would do that yourself, and perhaps how you would scale it, how you would tweak it to enhance it, then that's kind of the holy grail. So you want a process like that you feel like doesn't have big holes or gaps in it. You know, like you can see why it's working and how it's working. And when you get your head around that, then you know the business model. And then if it's historically, if it's achieved pretty solid results, consistent results, I mean, there's always going to be pivoting and changing strategies and so on. But if you get a model like that, that's kind of what you really want to buy, the holy grail of what you're trying to buy as a buyer. So that's kind of the key thing. And then there's all kinds of methodology around the evaluation. And, you know, we look at like, there's like, you know, several dozen things you can evaluate, but there's content and ownership and reasons people are selling and the financials and you know, branding and legal aspects, all of those kinds of things that you want to look at. But the core thing is, how do they get their customers and what's the risk profile of the site?
So how do you work with it? First of all, that's really, really good advice. Understanding the customer journey from beginning, from top of funnel, just awareness of the site that you're looking at, down to the actual acquisition of the client, right? How do you handle that in, say, an environment like Amazon, or where you're dealing with other marketplaces, or even with, I guess, with e-commerce, you do have the customer journey, but have you worked much with Amazon to see how you would evaluate that?
Well, no, I don't have a lot of very specific experience with Amazon, but I can tell you that, you know, Amazon FBA is actually a very sophisticated business, because there's so many elements of it, and you have to do each of them quite well, actually. And but you know, so it isn't. That's one of those cases where it's not just a simple, you know, three or four silver bullets and then you win. It's like the people who do Amazon FBA well do a lot of things well. They do product selection very well, niche selection first, product selection well. Then they understand the launch process, like putting the right brand on their product and then getting those initial reviews. And they understand the inventory process, so they don't have cash problems with having generating demand and then having nothing to sell to people. And then they have to understand the operational aspects too. Like, how do they, once, you know, they're making sales, how do they actually get the product out and in a good way, and then servicing the customers later on and answering their questions when there's negative reviews. And so it's really, it's a complex process. So the, what I just said earlier about what's the engine behind it. Well, in that case, the engine is, are there good SOPs? Is there a good team? Is there like, what's kind of the nuance that has allowed, like some people are super good at branding, right? And they're super good at that product launch process in Amazon. And so that's kind of what's given them the edge over the competition. And other people, you know, are good with the analytics and the numbers and, you know, the ratios of shipping costs, cost of goods sold to, you know, whatever they're spending on customer service and all that kind of stuff, which that's all fine. But it's kind of that, it's that front end that's probably more important in Amazon, just like how are they interacting with the customer. So.
And this is why it's so important for sellers to document their processes, you know, because a lot of this stuff is done almost from a skill set that has developed over years. Having those processes documented, the stuff that you do on a day-to-day basis, helps buyers like you, Jeff, or any of the buyers out there understand what's going on and trying to simulate that as well. I want to go back to what you said about graphs, because that really caught my attention. I'm with you on that. I love graphs. I think visualizing data, specifically the financial data, is something people don't do enough. I mean, I'm going to geek out a little bit here and say my favorite graph that I use when I'm evaluating a business myself is a year-over-year analysis. Now, I like to look at both the revenue. If there's gross profit, definitely take a look at that if you're able to, if it's done on an accrual basis, and then discretionary earnings. And it was a year-over-year because it smooths out some of the seasonality that you're naturally going to have, and pretty much every business that's out there has even a little bit of seasonality. Is there like a favorite approach or a favorite sort of graph that you would recommend, or any other piece of data that you would look at to say, hey, you know, here's kind of a peek into the future, or maybe what the relative health of this business is?
First of all, I love year-over-year analysis too. When you have a business that has enough historical data out there to be able to do that, then that's really, really helpful. And but in terms of adding to that, you know, for me, one of the important things is ratios. And you know, if you have a numbers degree, whether it's finance or accounting or whatever, they teach you about that. But actually, it's simpler than what you don't have to learn what you do in school. What it is you're looking for things like the percentages of the costs that make up the total cost of the product or the service. And like a lot of times you can find problems where, you know, for a few months, you know, shipping was a lot of money, or cost of product or cost of advertising was a lot of money. And then some of those costs drop off, or the ratio changes, the percentage change dramatically. And for me, you know, those are kind of, you know, like a lot of people are afraid of financial analysis of P&Ls, but actually, we understand that what you're looking for is kind of that stability of the business. And then the flags are things like changes in the ratios, change the peaks and valleys in the chart. And is there a good explanation for those peaks and valleys? Because peaks and valleys are just fine. What the only concern is, what are the reasons behind those peaks and valleys? And sometimes, for example, you know, sellers really have, they may not have any idea why they're getting more customers or any idea why they lost customers. And the big problem with that is that, you know, when you buy the site and something happens, you're not going to be able to get those customers back if you don't know the reasons for those things. So so there's some of the tools and things that I look at. And also I would just say that kind of in the evaluation stage, and certainly in the due diligence stage, one of the most important tools for new buyers is to compare different sources of information. So just in the content world, for example, a lot of times you'll have analytics reports, and you have, you know, your ad network reports, and then sometimes, you know, you have bank statements and you have tax statements. You actually a lot of times have a lot of different sources for very similar information, and it's important to kind of compare those sources together to see if something's missing, something's out of whack, and it can kind of really help you. And certainly in e-commerce, the same thing. I mean, a lot of times you'll have, you know, traffic analysis, and you'll say, well, I'm getting this many sales per page views. And then you have, you know, shopping cart software on your website. You have merchant processors who have similar data, and then whatever's happening in your bank account, and all of those things kind of should line up. So there's actually some pretty simple tools once you're kind of aware of them, to be able to take the, you know, the mystique off of what a lot of people are a little bit concerned about when they first enter a business.
Wow. I kind of wish we started with this rather than buy big versus buy small sort of conversation. There's a lot of details we could get into here, but we are up against the clock a little bit here. I think this idea of understanding the customer journey, understanding how they become customers and the processes involved there, both can help any buyer understand how healthy a business is and how nuanced or how specialized they're going to have to be in their ownership of that business, but also potentially uncover some opportunities. If there's leakage, for example, in that customer journey where you're losing a lot of people at a certain step, maybe they aren't taking advantage of cart abandonment technologies, or maybe they don't have a good email automation. You know, these are opportunities that might be available for buyers. And then also this idea of looking at ratios, really, really solid advice. You know, the ratios, and what I will do again when I'm evaluating a business is I'll look at cost of goods sold. What, you know, gross profit's one of the first things that I look at. Is that ratio staying healthy? Because you don't want a business where that's getting squeezed over time, or at least you need to understand that. But also compare advertising to total revenue. Are you having to spend more to keep the same revenue? And, you know, has that owner adjusted in other areas? So maybe they're spending more, but cutting back on staff or something like that to make the bottom line look healthy. But maybe lying underneath, there's a few issues that people have to be aware of. I would love to sit and talk for a couple of hours, because I think we could talk for a couple of hours. Maybe what we'll do is we'll have you on again in the future, and we can continue the conversation. In the meantime, where can people learn more about you?
Yeah, I have a website called heckyeah.org, and then ownoptimize.com is where I'm selling my courses right now. So those are the two places. And yes, Mark, I would love to, you know, this is one of my favorite topics, really, is this idea of first-time buyers, second, third-time buyers. What are the questions that they have? What should they look for? And as you say, lots of things we could talk about, and we're just kind of barely scratching the surface. So I'd love to come back and talk some more about it.
Cool. Hey, Jeff, thanks for coming on. Really appreciate you coming on, and we'll stay in touch.
Yeah, sounds good. Great. Thanks a lot for having me.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Quiet Light Podcast. For more resources from this episode, head over to quietlightbrokerage.com. If you're enjoying the show, please leave a rating and review in iTunes. This helps share the messages from the show with more business owners like you.